Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome back to Freedom Machines with Freddie Dobbs. Today's episode is brought to you by SysApp, the motorcycle tracker and rider's mate. Although it's not actually just for motorcycles, it's also for cars, boats, anything really with wheels and an engine, or even anything with an engine. You can use it as a mate to track where that vehicle is. It's also got a new feature that they've just added to the app, and that is an organizer section. So for example, for motorbikes, you can add push notifications and SMS notifications for technical inspections, insurance dates, general maintenance, and chain maintenance. Save those all to your app, and then it will ping up and remind you 2 weeks or however long before the event that you need to know about it. So that is SysApp, and thank you very much to them for sponsoring this episode. Now then, down to business. A recent YouTube video I did, I noticed a car that I'd never seen before. A Datsun 120Y. Not motorbike related at all, this. But it's a really nice shaped car, and I got a gigantic amount of feedback from it. And I always find it really funny. For example, if I post a Ferrari, a Lamborghini, something like this, the amount of interest I get is okay. But if I post a normal, everyday car from a certain period back in time, it is 100 times the amount of interest. I recently posted about a Ferrari F50, I think it was. Got a few comments about it. But post a normal, humdrum, everyday car, like the 1970s Datsun 120Y, people are freaking out. And do you know what's so good about these everyday cars, and these cars from whatever era you were from, when you were a child, a youngster, growing up, just passing your test, all the craziness you got up to. I just love what vehicles do. They take us back to that exact moment in time. It's incredibly nostalgic. You get these brilliant connections with vehicles, whether it's a car or a motorbike. And I thought I'd just share a few of those memories that people have. And a lot of these people, because the Datsun 120Y, which if you didn't know, it's a 1970s absolute run-of-the-mill Japanese estate or saloon car. And it is, a few people have said, it's one of the cars that eventually killed off the British cars, British Leyland. Because back in the day, 1960s, etc., etc., the majority of cars in the UK, the vast, vast majority, were British cars. But British Leyland then, I think, basically got lazy, and the quality of the cars was borderline atrocious. But by what I've heard, Japanese come along and they then show that, wow, we can make a car that actually starts in the morning. And that was the end of British Leyland, probably. And this, probably, from what I've heard, is one of those cars. So I love these. Just a few people. It's just amazing It's amazing the type of memories that people have and how vivid those memories are and how mundane those memories are. But actually, that is what makes up life, all of these little memories. You could think, how can someone remember this or that? But these things, vehicles connect us to these memories in a way that almost nothing else does. Listen to a few of these. My wife and I drove our 1978 Datsun 100A Cherry from Colchester, England, to the Oposia del Mar in Spain in 1985. We had to take the bonnet off and put it on the roof rack with the luggage to stop the engine overheating. 2,500 miles, poor little thing. Great car, we loved it. Another wrote, I had as my first car a Datsun 100, which I think is probably the little brother of this, which will be the small hatchback. I think it was a 100A, if I remember correctly. I bought it off my dad in the early 80s. The heater was turned on via a tap which leaked hot water onto my leg. Great fun, though. And someone else, wow, those are proper little rust boxes or rot boxes. There can't be many of those left. My dad had an old red 120Y van for his bricklaying business, basically the estate version of the car. And a few years later, I had a Mark II Escort stolen and bought a white 120Y saloon at an auction for £215 to get me back on the road. A week later, the struts collapsed inward as they were rotten. We jacked them back into the place with the builder's acro prop, welded some patches, bolted on a couple of steel bars across the top struts, and drove it like that for another 8 months. And I will do I'll do one more. I'm old enough to remember them, the Datsun 120Y. My brother had a Saturday job jet blasting the wax coating off them. That was applied to prevent them rusting as they were shipped back to the UK. They gave your wife a bunch of flowers when you bought one new. I love that. These memories, they are priceless. They are absolutely priceless. I thought I'd take a look at the UK. How many of these Datsun 120Ys are actually left? And it's a website I really like, howmanyleft.co.uk. And if I type in Datsun 120Y, I won't go for the van version. I won't go for the automatic. I'll just go for the pure Datsun 120Y. There are, in the UK left, 43 of those Datsuns in the entire UK still on the road. That's still on the road being driven. There are a further 47 SORN, which means they're registered as off the road. They're not being driven. They're locked up in garages around the UK. So that is 90 Datsun 120Ys left in the United Kingdom. And this coming from a car that is way, way more popular than I thought it would be. The amount of people that said they'd driven a Datsun 120Y or Datsun 100 or Cherry blew my mind. These must have been everywhere. So for there to only now be 90 left. Wow. And I had to do one more. This is a car, my first ever car. I've gone completely blank. Oh, I was spelling it wrong. It's a Vauxhall Nova. Vauxhall Nova, these were everywhere. Everyone either had or drove a Vauxhall Nova. You couldn't give them away when I passed my test, or even just before that, about 2003, and in the year 2000, you could barely give them away. And now, Vauxhall Nova, there are 80, apparently, according to this website, there are 80 Vauxhall Novas currently driving around in the UK. 80. And SORN, that's declared off-road, locked up in people's garages and not being driven, 436. It just shows, whether it's a car or motorbike, you get to this tipping point. These vehicles become completely worthless. They're a joke. No one wants them. I remember that with the Vauxhall Nova. And then you get something like this ULEZ scheme in the UK or in London where, you know, you're not allowed to drive your cars in cities, and then you get a scrappage scheme, and then the government's offering you £2,000 to scrap your car or £1,000 to scrap your motorbike. Everyone's doing it. I remember it happened a few years ago in the UK. I didn't think anything of it, but what happened is all of these borderline future classics just off to the scrapyard. So you got that awkward point where all of these classic cars that were probably 6 years away from being classics, all gone, and the numbers just dropped so violently, it's eye-opening. So you've got very few of these cars left, and what happens then? Prices are going to start going through the roof. They already have for the Vauxhall Nova. Oh, I remember so well, £350, £400. I'm not even talking about a sports one now. You're going to need about 5k for a bog standard Vauxhall Nova. Forget about getting any sports one. I like this type of email. Someone emailed and said, I'm already a car owner. I have a bit of a dilemma about buying a bike for passion versus practicality. The passion purchase is without question a Bonneville T120 Black. The functional purchase would be a Honda CB500X or the upcoming Triumph Tiger Sport 660. Pretty divergent choice, etc., etc. What would you recommend? I love these types of emails or comments or messages, because this is probably the type of question that people have more than any other. Do you go for common sense and practicality, or do you go for a passionate purchase? Because if you're going common sense and practicality, it is completely impossible to argue with the Japanese stuff. Honda CB500X, I don't think there'll be a more bulletproof bike that will get you from A to B more competently than that bike, and for a reasonable price. That bike will do everything and will last forever. So what does it take to go out there and spend a significant chunk of extra money? Bonnevilles are very reliable bikes, but it's probably not going to be quite as reliable as the Honda. So you're spending more, you're probably getting a little bit less in terms of reliability, and the maintenance costs will probably be more as well. But for me, if you can, I get it if you need a bike for every day for commuting and you just need it as a winter hack, for example. But for me, if you can go out there and spend that little bit extra, biking's that passionate purchase. You know, I would always recommend, if someone's looking at two different bikes, and clearly, like this email, this person has their heart set on a Bonneville T120 Black. I think if you're the type of person that has your dream bike in your mind and you want that bike for a passionate purchase, like I could tell this email coming to me was from, I think you have to go and buy it, because I've been there before. I've bought a bike thinking, no, Freddie, go out there and get a sensible bike. Get a sensible bike and then see how you feel first. And guess what happens? After 2 weeks, you realize you didn't actually want the sensible bike. You're still looking on Auto Trader, on eBay, every single day at the bike you didn't buy, but secretly deep down you wanted. So I would always say, if you've got a dream bike in mind, and if there's any possible way you can go out there and get it, go out and get that dream bike. Right. This is a little segment I wanted to do today, and I've been meaning to do it for a while. Biking can be expensive to get into. Let's say, for example, in the UK, there are a few different tests, whether you're dependent on age and the size of the bike that you can ride. It all gets a bit complicated. It's a bit daunting. So you basically need around about £600 in the UK to be able to pass your full motorbike test. That is from never having ridden a bike before, doing a 1 week direct access course. So you'll go from never having touched a motorbike before to, if you pass, having passed all of your tests and be able to ride any motorbike you want, as long as you're over the age of 24. If you're under that, it means you're limited to a 47 horsepower bike like an Interceptor. So you need an outlay of £600. It's not an insignificant amount of money. And then you get to the clothing. You can easily spend £300 on a jacket. You can easily spend £200 on jeans, £200 on boots. That is £300, £500, £700, £100 on gloves, £800, £300 on a helmet, £1,100. Easily £1,100. And then you get to the motorbike. Incredibly easy to spend £10,000 plus on a motorbike. So either that's a one-off £10,000 payment, or I can't help myself, I was looking at the Harley Davidson Softail, the basic model, this morning. Finance looking at about something like 3 years or something like that, 3 years finance, looking at about 400 a month to pay off the bike entirely, no payment at the end. 440 pounds a month without any deposit. That's more than my mortgage cost. And I would get that if I was in a slightly more comfortable position. But what I'm looking at now is for a new rider who doesn't have all the money in the world, like I was. And to be honest, I'm borderline a bit like that now. So what can you do? You want a bike that looks cool. You also, I would highly suggest, you want a bike that's reliable. Because if you buy a bike and it's unreliable as your first bike, it can genuinely put you off biking. I know a few people that that's happened to. So you need a cool, reliable bike that's easy and cheap to maintain and reliable. And you need a full set of biking gear. But you've already spent £600 on taking the test. I am going to right now, show you how you can go out there and have a full set of motorcycle gear. That is jeans, boots, jacket and helmet, and buy a motorbike all for under, I'm just working out in my head now, I think it's all for under £300. All of that for under £300. Let me know if you think I'm cheating a bit, but here we go. So £300, you're going to be on the road. Not just that, you're going to be on the road £300 with a brand new bike. And I've chosen a brand new bike here because it's that reliability thing. I've never owned a brand new bike in my life, but this bike is such incredible value. I honestly think you may as well just buy it brand new. You get the 2 or 3 years warranty. You'll have no issues with reliability at all. It will be a brilliant, viable mode of transport. It will be comfortable. You can even have it with a backrest. And a backrest is the single most important thing for pillion comfort, as Monica will tell you. Comfy seat. It's borderline, but Monica always says the backrest and the comfy seat most important. It's got to be as flat a seat as possible so you're not sitting too high. And a backrest is a game-changing bit of kit. And this bike can have a backrest. The bike in question costs £3,879. And you may well have guessed it, for a brand new bike, 350cc, looks incredible, highly customizable, Royal Enfield Meteor. Now, I know I've discussed this before, but it's impossible to look past this bike. £3,879 for a bike that looks incredible. I cannot get my head around that. And what's better, I've looked into finance options for you as well. No initial deposit payment, because I want this to be as cheap as possible. So I've spread the payments out evenly over 3 years with an APR interest rate of 5%. So to go out there and get a loan for the exact to the penny amount that you'll need for the Royal Enfield Meteor, that's including all of the taxes and the registration, it will be £116 a month. And at the end of the 3 years, you own the bike in its entirety. There won't be any balloon payment or any messing around like that. £116. So there goes £116 of my budget. Next up, I'm onto eBay and I've got an incredibly cool looking vintage leather biking jacket. I'd be proud to wear that. It looks amazing. Buy it now, price £55. A pair of, eBay again, Resurgence motorcycle jeans. They look off the scale cool. £45, buy it now price. That is £100. Next up, still eBay, motorcycle Spada boots, £39. That's £140. And then I found a Biltwell Gringo SECE helmet, £38. It is the current bid. I'm going to put that up to £50 because I think that's where it will go. It's got 2 days left. So that is £50. Add £40, that's £90. Add £45, that's £135. Add 55, that is £190 plus gloves, take your pick for a tenner second hand. £200 plus the 116, okay, £316. You can go out there with just £316 and have everything you need for biking. I think that's amazing. I think Well, I love eBay, and I've bought a lot of secondhand gear off eBay for biking, so I do practice what I preach with that 100%. And also, what Royal Enfield have done there with getting making biking accessible to the masses, I think it's just so game-changing. I know I always talk about it, but there you go. Any new riders, or anyone just wanting to get back into riding, or anyone just wanting to make riding good value, £316. That is all you need. Right, this is interesting for Brits and also people looking to get around some of the oncoming issues that we're having in big cities to reduce reduce pollution, but to to tax internal combustion vehicles. So how can we get around all of these increasing taxes, getting taxed on everything as car and motorcycle riders and drivers? For example, if you live in the UK, if you live in London, you're going to have to pay, I think, something like £12 congestion if you've got a bike made before 2010. And you're also going to have to pay for the ULEZ scheme, Ultra Low Emission Zone, which I think is a further £12. So you're going to have to pay something like £25 a day if you're riding in London, if you have a motorbike, I think, made about before 2008. And it will affect a lot of riders. And of course, I think this will keep on changing and changing. So maybe that 2008 will change to 2012 and et cetera, et cetera. So someone messaged me. They bought a project bike. And let me read this out to you. Okay. I just thought I'd give you an update, Freddie. After a lot of backwards and forwards with TfL, that's Transport for London, I decided a different tactic. I managed to speak with the DVLA, the Driver Vehicle Licensing Agency. I changed the taxation class to historic, and now my bike is ULEZ exempt. So it hasn't quite changed on the system yet, but it won't be long. And basically, this guy has built a beautiful, don't have it up with me now. I think it's a Honda, but beautiful kind of candy red, great looking project bike, looks amazing. And in the UK, if you have a vehicle 40 years or older, so 1981 or older, it's tax exempt, you don't pay a penny tax, and it's ULEZ exempt, so you can ride in London with no issue at all. So this guy's built his beautiful project bike, he's now registered it taxation class as historic, so it sounds like you have to register it as historic. But then what you get is an incredible get around. I mean, you don't do this for environmental purposes, you do it as a good get around. I know a lot of people who have done this. You don't need to pay any ULEZ charge, you don't need to worry about any tax. I mean, the tax on my Bonneville is 120 a year, and if I was riding into London, that's a good saving. That's a really good saving. And listen to this. This is just a bit of kind of official information from the UK, maybe different in other countries. I'm quoting here. While most pre-2008 motorbikes are liable for the charge, that's the congestion charge and the ULEZ charges in London. So while most pre-2008 bikes are liable for the charge, vehicles which qualify for the historic vehicle taxation class are exempt. That means that bikes must be at least 40 years old, but there are still plenty of 1970s bikes that make great everyday rides. That's me quoting there. So it got me thinking. All right, let's get this, see what I've got. Okay. Pre-1981. What is that? You're moving into the realms of as that article said, some fairly usable motorbikes. So I'm on to Auto Trader to have a look at this, because these bikes could be the best of both worlds. So almost a bit future-proof with this historic taxation class. And straight in onto Auto Trader, the bike section, I've done year, any year up to 1980. So it could be, from 1920s to 1980. I don't care. I haven't put any other criteria in. And a bike that's popped up, which would be the exact type of bike that I would be looking to get. I really think if you're looking pre-1980, 1981, you're looking at Japanese bikes because you do want that quality. And probably, tell me if I'm wrong, the Japanese were the only ones making properly usable, everyday, reliable bikes back then. But what's popped up straight off? A 200cc Honda CD200 looks absolutely brilliant. In fact, it looks so good it can almost, if you restore it, it could almost be a bike for sale right now. It looks like a modern retro almost. That's £995. It's in fact, an area I used to live pretty close to, Sutton, southwest London. Honda CD200, surely it's going to be as reliable as anything. It's actually for sale in a garage. It's got the original paintwork. It's 15 horsepower. So in fact, actually, that could be quite a good learner bike as well for the right category. New tyre, new shocks. It's got the Kickstarter. Only 4 former keepers. It's got the logbook. They've got the keys. It's HPI certified, so there's no funny issues with it. Chassis matches the VIN number. Lightweight, twin cylinder, simple bike. Typically an example of Japanese simple engineering that will last for years to come. And it's over 41 years old now. I'd be very tempted by that. You know, maybe give it a bit. It doesn't need it, but restore that, and you've got a lovely little bike for years to come. Some of these I almost can't believe the prices of. Look at this one. 1968 Triumph Tiger Cub 200cc up in Coventry in the Midlands. I can't believe you can get a Triumph Tiger Cub for £2,195. Candy red or cherry red. That's a glorious looking little thing. 14,172 miles from new. Recently, this is almost impossible. I'm checking this isn't a con. It's not. It's from a garage. Recently, the bike's been restored to a great standard and looks stunning. If I had some money, I'd be out buying that. It's from the Coventry Motorcycle Company. How is that only £2,195? If you're on the market for that, get on to Auto Trader right now and type in Triumph Tiger Cub from 1968. Someone with enough money and desire to have a bike like that. It's a no-brainer. I mean, they keep popping up. Honda CB175, 1976, £2,495. £2,495. It's done 9,000 miles. It looks so beautiful. The old Honda bikes, they really are absolutely stunning. And listen to this. This is from a garage. They said these CBs are flying up in value and a great investment resto project. This bike is a German project with German import with all the paperwork. 45-year-old bike. This is quite eye-opening. If you're in the market or you're open-minded to getting one of these classics, I think these Hondas are impossible to beat. The CB175, CB200s. These CBs are the definition of class. I tell you what, this company clearly knows what they're doing, because the exact same company as the one previously, there's another bike very similar, Suzuki GT, looks just like that Honda 2.5K. Let me do one more before I wrap up. I want to see if I can find something interesting here. Okay, right, I'm into the 3000s now. I've got Honda Cubs restored in 2007. I'm going to go to page 4. I want one more. We've got Yamaha. That's a nice one. Oh, that's a nice one. Okay, I think I found the one I want to let you know about. I'll just check the rest of them. Honda CB500, 1975. But I've done a few Hondas. Let me do a Kawasaki. I think actually I'm going to have to do this one. Oh, it's close. Okay, very quickly. Yamaha XS500, 1978. Original US import. Looks off the scale. Cool. £3,500. 15,000 miles on the clock. I would be so proud to ride that bike. It looks off the scale. Cool. But what I have to go for, final one. Kawasaki KE100. It's like a, what would you call it, a trails bike, but in the best possible way. It looks Steve McQueen kind of desert rally type. £3,500, 100cc. No, I tell you what, that's 100cc. For commuting, I would prefer this. Yamaha XS500, 1978. It looks completely immaculate, and it's been registered with HM Revenues and Customs in 2017, so it's all legit, and it's originally from Colorado Springs. There you go, I'll end it on that. Go and have a look. Pre-1981 motorbikes, especially from the UK, tax exempt, congestion exempt. They're going to possibly start becoming more and more appealing, actually. And I'll end it there. Thank you so much to SysApp for sponsoring this week's episode. I highly recommend them. I use it on my motorbike. They've also got it for cars. I've got the car tracker on order as well, and boats and everything else. So check them out. And thank you so much, everyone, for sticking with me for this week's episode. Have a brilliant week, and I'll speak to you in the next one.